Let's bring this meeting to order. Welcome to all of you. We have some very interesting business to talk about today, and I'm hoping that you will get all the answers to your question, all the answers to your questions answered. What I'd like to do is have you all join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We do have a quorum as soon as Vice President Thomas sits down.
Oh, yeah.
We have a quorum. So all five of the directors are here. Thank you for being here. We also have someone here who has joined us. Could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, I am Laura Christensen. I'm the Deputy City Manager and City Clerk for the City of Atascadero.
And she is going to be doing the tallying of the contests. Okay. What we're going to do first, and do we have our Mr. Schultz online at this point?
Yes, Madam President.
Okay, thank you very much. We have a short presentation that we're going to begin with today, and the reason we're going to do that is because it may answer some of the questions that you have. Once we do the presentation, we will then begin the public comment. During the public comment, the people who are in the know here will not be the ones, will not be answering your questions until the end of public comment. Once we have public comment, and during that time, they will be recording your questions and they will be answering your questions at the end of public comment, rather than doing back and forth, and that may get confusing at times. So hopefully you will get your questions answered at that point. After the public comment, we will begin the agenda item 3A, and that will be the public hearing where information is going to be given to you by our General Manager McElhaney. And then we will go ahead and do the hearing. The tallying will be done by the end of the meeting. So there is time to continue at this point to hand in your forms for your protests. If you have not handed those in yet, please do so before the end of the meeting so that we can tally them and make sure we have the right number. Okay.
President?
Yes. Yes, we will not close the meet close the hearing until the counting is done. You're welcome. Okay. Mr. Schultz, do we have, oh, there you are.
Here I am. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, welcome. Thank you
Thank
so
you.
much for helping us here.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me via Zoom today. Board President, members of the board, staff, and public, I saw you in November when we first presented this item prior to issuance of the Proposition 218 notices of this public hearing that went out to the ratepayers. I am Garth Schultz. I'm president with R3 Consulting. We're here before you in our capacity, working for the City of San Luis Obispo, who served as the lead agency for 10, a grouping of 10 participating agencies here in San Luis Obispo County regarding the 2025 rate adjustment for Mission Country Disposal and its two other sister companies operating in the county, and for a new rate adjustment methodology, which we were engaged to develop in partnership with the City of San Luis Obispo participating agencies and the Waste Connections family of companies. An important note for you and the public is that R3 in our capacity, we're here as servants of the public good. We work for public agencies such as the district and others throughout the state. We aren't working for Waste Connections, but we do work collaboratively on matters such as solid waste utility management and sustainable funding of those programs with companies like Waste Connections and others throughout the state. And I have my slide. Is it showing on the public's end down there? Great, I got a nod. Thank you, Tim. So just a brief summary, and much of this has been presented to the board before. So we're summarizing this information for the purposes of today's presentation. You know, what we're talking about here are the solid waste recycling and organics services provided by Mission Country Disposal to residents and businesses within the district. The district contracts with Mission Country Disposal for that critical service, collection of solid waste to prevent, you know, accumulations and nuisances and vectors is required under state law, and public agencies have the choice to operate that on their own as a municipal operation or to contract it out to private entities. Here in the district, you contract that out to Mission Country Disposal, and that is largely the standard that is followed by most agencies throughout the state, is to contract with a private operator for that utility. The subject before you is that you have the ability as a district to authorize up to 5 years of solid waste rate adjustments at a time, and it's important for the board and for members of the public to know there's no automatic adjustments to solid waste rates to keep up with the costs of providing that service. So it is through these types of rate setting processes that rates and therefore rate revenues to sustainably fund this utility are considered and authorized by agencies such as yours. By way of background, so the primary reason we're here is that Mission Country Disposal, your garbage contractor, submitted what is called a cost-based rate adjustment proposal. And what that means is that they, you know, presented their financial statements and projected the cost of providing solid waste services in the district and to nine other agencies that we're working with for the calendar year 2025. And that rate adjustment application was made in adherence to an existing rate setting policy that you and the others have followed for 30 years. Through that policy, the company has the ability to come forward every 3 years for such a cost-based rate adjustment. So the last one occurred in 2022, the one before that was in 2019, so on and so forth. And in between those cost-based rate adjustments, you have CPI adjustments for 2 years. So the pattern is cost-based adjustment, 2 years of CPI adjustment. And that's all through this existing rate adjustment methodology from 1994. Part of the reason that we're before you is because that 1994 rate adjustment methodology, being 30 years old, is outdated, doesn't consider certain current noticing standards, say as those required by Proposition 218, and also doesn't consider other industry standards that have developed and shifted over the course of 30 years. So the district, along with, you know, nine other agencies under the, you know, lead role provided by the City of San Luis Obispo, you know, sought to update that outdated methodology and to provide benefits to the parties. And that's part of what we're reporting out on today, and we did back in November. Starting with the immediate piece first, this 2025 rate adjustment, the cost-based rate adjustment that's before you. As I noted already, what that does is it projects coming costs based on their recent audited financial statements. They've provided those through to the district. We've reviewed those thoroughly and asked questions and sought confirmations and made adjustments. So what is before you is based on actual costs and then reasonable escalations to those costs for the coming year. And there are primary factors affecting the rate adjustment that's being seen. First and foremost among them is an increase in organics processing costs. And by organics, I mean those materials that are collected in the green bin. So yard trimmings, food scraps, things like that. Processing those and not putting them in the garbage, not having them go to the landfill is a requirement under state law, SB 1383. And so in essence, this change in organics processing cost, which is a part of the rate adjustment, is driven by state law. And it's not a discretionary item for the company or for the district. And that is the largest overall proportion or you know, element of the increase. A second factor, and it's the kind of, and these are in a descending order of kind of impact within the rate adjustment, is a change in landfill disposal costs. The landfill disposal costs that the company has been carrying in the rate revenues have not changed since 2016. They've remained flat. And so the adjustment for 2025 and years after includes bringing the landfill disposal costs up to fair comparable market rate, and also is necessary because the company has had since 2016 increases in costs associated with operations and maintenance and construction at the landfill. And some of those costs are the cost for the materials to build new cells. Some of those costs are labor costs. Some of those costs are equipment costs and California Air Board requirements for emissions and particulates coming out of those vehicles. So that's a secondary component. And then the remaining components are less impactful in the overall rate adjustment. For the primary service that Mission Country Disposal provides to the district and its ratepayers, which is the collection of three containers, garbage, organics, and recycling from homes and businesses, those costs are only increasing nominally in accordance with changes in labor wage rates, things like fuel and insurance, and they're on the scale of, I believe, around 4% for this coming year. There are a couple of other impacts associated with the changes, the recommended changes to the rate adjustment methodology. One of those is, and this says remover of prior limitations. That's not to say that corporate overhead would be unlimited by any means, but what this second to last bullet means is that the company has not been, since 1996, fully compensated for the corporate overhead costs that it actually incurs. And the reason for that is that when the prior 1994 rate adjustment model was put into place, this was a privately held organization, and corporate overhead meant officer salaries, and it no longer means officer salaries. It means IT functions, HR functions, insurance, taxes. So, you know, legitimate costs that are passed through from the parent company as services down to the local companies. And so this through this item, they will be compensated for those current costs, but they will still be limited to changes in those costs going forward by CPI in the coming several years and with restrictions in future cost-based adjustments. A final adjustment, and then I'll move on to the next slide, is an update to the profit allowance that the company could earn given the rate revenues and the rates that are recommended. Presently, the profit allowance to the company is, one, they haven't been profitable within this this operation for a few years due to changing costs and declining revenues as folks subscribe to smaller garbage containers. And part of this is to move them into a place of reasonable profitability, given it, that they operate within the rate revenues that would be allowed by these rates. This is not a blank check for them to increase costs and earn more profits. You're regulating the revenues given cost projections. If they don't operate the company within those cost projections, then that profit is not earned and you are not obligated to fulfill that except in very certain conditions. So what does it look like in terms of the overall? What are we talking about here? So this chart demonstrates in the top few rows, what your rates are paying for. So you can see that top line collection services, that's the people in trucks driving to the community, picking up containers from homes and businesses, and bringing the contents back to South County for landfill processing, recycling, organics, and disposal. So you can see that's roughly $2 million, 1.95. The profit allowance that I referenced before, recommended for 2025, is 9% of that collection services line. And that's an important note. It's not 9% of overall expenses. It's just 9% on their collection services, which is roughly 5% of the overall rate. So that's in that profit allowance. Again, the company has to live within the expense or revenue projections shown here in order for them to earn that. If they don't control their expenses, then that's not something that that they will fulfill. Post-collection services, what that means is that's the costs, external costs to the company to landfill their solid waste, which is with another Waste Connections affiliated operation at Cold Canyon Landfill, to compost the organics materials, which I referenced as being an unfunded state mandate that does is required to be funded through the solid waste operation, and then the processing of recyclables. The company has no profit allowance on the post-collection services. And then there's your agency fees to the district for your costs to fund your costs associated with management and administration of this agreement, use of the public right-of-way and impacts to roadways. So altogether, you can see that cost projections for 2025 total up to roughly $3.2 million. And if you were not to adjust rates today, the company would continue to earn revenues based on rates from last year, from 2024. And that's what this next line shows. The 2024 rates are calculated to yield around 2.8 or 2.9 million in revenues. And what this next line below, the shortfall prior to rate adjustment, shows is if the district doesn't adjust rates, this is the difference between their projected costs and the revenues that they would receive. In order to avoid that shortfall, the recommended rate adjustment is the 12.59% that's been noticed and is included in your packet. What does that mean for your ratepayers? Well, this is what it looks like. You've got a small 32-gallon bundled service for residents, medium 64-gallon, and large 96-gallon. And you can see the change, you know, the monthly rates in 2024. The effective maximum monthly rates for 2025 if the district authorizes the rate adjustment, and the change in monthly rate that would be seen. And I know that Jeff Claren, general manager with Mission Country Disposal, in the audience, and he might be able to correct me on this, but my recollection here is that the majority of your folks are in the 32-gallon service level, the smallest overall service level. With the rate adjustment does come a couple of service enhancements for the community and ratepayers. One is that you would have a provision of a new no-charge collection for one bulky item during your cleanup weeks. Currently, that first bulky item is something that is paid for directly by the ratepayer when setting out that bulky item. This would transition that to a no-charge for that, funded by the overall rate base. And what this does is it helps eliminate barriers to folks getting rid of unwanted materials and helping to eliminate, you know, set out of materials on the curb or in the public right of way or illegal dumping of those materials. And that's a countywide initiative in order to bring down the incidence of unwanted materials being in the public space. And a second component here is the annual card exchange. I mentioned the state law introducing new requirements to divert or compost organic waste. That means a lot more stuff going into our green bins, and those green bins can get kind of yucky. So what this annual card exchange does is it allows for every residential ratepayer once annually to exchange one of their containers and get a fresh, clean container in place. Those aren't necessarily going to be new containers. It will depend on inventory. This isn't to go out and buy new containers to fund this. This is to say, here, you know, residents, if your containers are getting a little bit stinky or a little bit gross and you want a fresh, clean one, this is your opportunity to do that. Waste Connections, Mission Country Disposal will take back the dirty cart, clean it at their site, and put it back into circulation for as long as it's in good condition. So those prior slides address that the 2025 rate recommendation, and this final couple are just about, you know, going forward, what's in the new rate adjustment methodology, and what are the benefits that it provides to the district and to the ratepayers, and also to Mission Country Disposal. So just a note here, you know, for the rate adjustment methodology, I believe that's not specifically on the agenda for today, but it will be coming forward to the board for consideration in the later date. But it is contemplated in the rate adjustment recommendations, and it is being adopted by the other nine participating agencies as well. It's a uniform approach to changing this methodology. The reasons for it is to enhance rate stability, make changes in rates more predictable. They've followed kind of a sawtooth pattern in recent years to provide fairness within the county around rate adjustments, to provide greater transparency in terms of what's being brought forward. And even our presentations and report are showing new information in new ways than you've seen in the past, to make it easier for the district and the other agencies and the company to implement and to ultimately enhance cost effectiveness of the process. A few elements of how that's being accomplished is setting a floor and a ceiling to the CPI rate adjustments that occur. And then anything above a 5% ceiling would roll over to following years. So that has a stabilizing effect on rate adjustments, avoiding peaks and valleys or spikes in rates or rate changes. Another element that affects that is this revenue balancing mechanism. So, you know, what this means is I showed a revenue relation for 2025. If the company exceeds that in 2025, well, the surplus carries forward to offset rates in a future year. Conversely, if the company doesn't achieve that, it would be made up in future years. And what that does is similar to, say, an enterprise fund for your solid or for your other utilities, is it ensures, again, overall stability within rate adjustments so that you're avoiding large spikes like I know the district has seen in prior years. Importantly, in the second to last bullet, gets to one of the key tenets of this rate adjustment methodology is it's stretching out the time between cost-based rate adjustments. As I mentioned previously, you have those every 3 years today. This would extend it to no more than every 5 years. What that means is instead of a cost-based adjustment with 2 years of CPI, you get a cost-based adjustment with 4 years of CPI at least, because if neither party come forward and suggest a cost-based adjustment 5 years from now, that CPI adjustment will continue until such time as a cost-based is called for. And then finally, a portion of the methodology does contemplate, you know, what happens if there's significant changes in law or changes in costs outside of the company's control. They do have the ability to come forward and request those, but they also bear the burden of proof in requesting those, and those would need to then be authorized by the board in order to be effective. I should note that this bullet actually should be revised. As of yesterday, we learned that California withdrew its waiver to the National Clean Air Act, which actually does change some of California Air Source's board fleet electrification mandates on private fleets. That's hot off the press type news. So this example may no longer be relevant here, but other types of unfunded government mandates could be relevant. Now, in terms of the recommended action for the board, it's to open your public hearing, as you already stated, board president, count the written protests. And then if no majority protests exists, our recommendation is to adopt the resolution authorizing the five-year rate adjustments that have been noticed through your Prop 218 noticing process so that you can provide for ongoing stable funding of this solid waste utility in the district. And with that, I'm happy to take questions the board may have, and I will be listening attentively to public comment in the Q&A process.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. We really appreciate your presentation. I would ask that you keep track of questions that are going to come forward during the public comment. And rather than interjecting within that public comment, we'll answer those questions at the end of public comment. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. So at this point, we're going to go ahead and go to the second agenda item, which is public comment. And this is only on the agenda items that are here because this is a special meeting. In regular meetings, then you can come up and you can say anything to the board or ask questions of the board pertaining to the jurisdiction of CCSD. But today it is only on the agenda items that are on the agenda today. I have several slips requesting to make public comment, and so I will take those, but there is no need to necessarily hand in a slip because I will ask for public comment, and if you want to just come up, please, during that time, Identify yourself and if you are a Cambria resident. Okay.
Just a question for the chair about the timing of the count. Is there a point in this meeting at which you no longer can turn in protests?
No.
And it goes to the very end of the hearing.
To the very end of the hearing so that we will tally the protests at the end of the hearing. We may take time out at the end of the hearing so that she can tabulate those protests, but she will do this in front of you, and we will have that report at the end of the hearing. Okay. Public comment is limited to 3 minutes. And I will start my timer when you come up and identify yourself, and then we'll go from there. I'm going to go ahead and start then with the slips that I have. The first slip that I have is from Keith Henriksen. Mr. Henriksen, will you please come up to the podium?
Thank you, Madam President. It's Keith Henriksen. Cambria now 26 years. Not that that should matter if I was only here for a year. These kinds of issues are relevant to all of us, regardless. Anyway, I have some questions. First of all, I apologize for my late entry into this discussion, because my questions probably should have been happening in November when his first presentation was coming around. But what I do have, and I should state that I don't have a problem with rate increases. I don't know that these rate increases are what we should be looking at, but the answers to my questions will help me decide that. The first question that I had to do with whether the increases were only going to be, my clock's not running.
Oh, thank you. You are so good.
I shouldn't have said anything. Oops. Or whether it was the actual expenses or if it was tied directly to CPI. My concern is that by eliminating the expenses that are the management, or I forgot what the title was for them, but by eliminating the controls on that expense, all that does is forestall, even with this program as it's set up, it will keep them from being able to increase it more than what the CPI is, or 5%. But whatever that additional money is, we'll just roll to the next year. So if they don't manage their costs effectively, it's not like it goes away. It just goes to the next year. And if the CPI is at a lower level, they're able to take and absorb that up to the 5% again. So I still have an issue with releasing them from having some sort of responsibility to taking and having those expenses managed. Second question. Has to do with the trash collection. And I noticed on one of the pages that I have here somewhere, here it is, that has to do with their landfills. I forgot, I have so many printouts of things regarding this that I've lost track of which one this one came from. But it doesn't actually say what the Chicago grade landfill, the one in Tescadero or Templeton, is, what those costs are for a truck. However, it does list what the cost is per ton, and their cost per ton, and trucks are, oftentimes the truck prices are often cheaper than the per ton prices, is $62. Our adjusted price that we should feel good about is 70. We're down from 92. And so I'm just wondering if they went to Templeton and talked to those folks to see if there was an option for us, because it affects all the other costs relative to. Because there's the problem with the distance. Okay. Going to the Templeton landfill is 43 miles. Going to San Luis Obispo is 56. So obviously it's going to affect how many man hours of labor there is for our trash to be disposed of too. So it's not just the disposal rate, but it starts figured into the wages. And then the wages are benefits and taxes and everything else there too. Okay. So I wanted to know if they had talked to them about that to see if there was a way, or if we're married to Old Canyon, if there's a way to take in and incorporate them instead. Okay, the third question that I have has to do with a couple of the documents that were presented. One of them is this one that was sent dated July 3rd of 24 from Jeff.
Mr. Henrichsen, your time is up.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Damn.
Shouldn't have reminded me.
Okay. There are a lot of questions, though, because the numbers don't jive.
And you may,
Somebody give me their 3 minutes?
Yeah. Have somebody else ask your question, perhaps.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next person that I'd like to call is Lori Valens. Please come to the podium.
Hello, I'm Lori Valens. I'm a resident of Cambria. In the past 3 years, emissions rates have increased more than 53%, not including the 20.73% increase in October 2022 that was said to be a recovery rate for delayed implementation. Since 2019, the first year rate increases have been huge. Now you're considering approving a 5-year increase with 12.59% in just 2025. My understanding is CCSD gets a 6% franchise fee whenever rates go up. So I have two questions. Can you use that fee to mitigate what the ratepayers pay? My second question, has any board member taken any action to investigate alternatives or even attempt negotiations for these outrageous and unreasonable increases? I also wish to say that any board member who votes for this increase won't get my vote in the future, and I bet there are other people in the community who feel the same way. And we will make sure Cambrians are reminded of whose interests you represent when you run for re-election. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next person to come up is Tina Dickinson.
The timer's already started and I'm not...
No, it's not started.
Okay. You're on item two, right? Not 3A.
This is public comment.
On item two.
It's related. Well, 3A is what this special hearing is about.
The special hearing, but I want to address Mr. Schultz's comments under two, which is what he was speaking under.
That's fine.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Mr. Schultz said that Mission Country or he is not working for Waste Connections, and yet Mission Country is a subsidiary of Waste Connections, who... they're one of the three largest in the country for waste refuse. They actually take 35% Waste Connections in America, and they're also very much in Canada. So it's a conglomerate sort of situation. I've looked at their stock reports, and they are doing extremely well, extremely well. And so I'd like to see, I've asked before, for a profit and loss statement for Mission Country. I haven't been given that information. But the other thing is, under Prop 218, the envelope that we're supposed to receive is supposed to have information that will have clearly marked what it's for. So this is what it came to. This is how it came. Tina Dickinson or current resident. I'm a homeowner, but if I was a tenant paying the trash bill, my name, I'm not current resident, and there's no marking. But when the district sends out for water and sewer, there is, in the lower left-hand corner, notice of public hearing of proposed increases to water and sewer. Many people that I've spoken to as I've been working on this protest said they didn't even know they got a notice. Why? Because it looks like junk mail. And that is not allowed under Prop 218. It has to identify somewhere on this envelope, in bold print. It's very explicit under 218. That did not happen. And so I'm very concerned about that. I'm very concerned about the fact that the implementation of the rate increase was identified as January 1st, 2025. The public hearing is January 16th. But in the September rate increase, September 15th, we had a meeting. The rate increase was effective. I've got the notice here, October 1st. So So here's the September 22, and the October 1st was the rate for the rates to be effective 2 weeks after the public hearing. The public hearing got pushed to September 26 because of the problems that occurred. But I mean, if people aren't getting what they're supposed to get, to know what this is, it just says Mission Country and then Tina Dickerson or current resident. That is not clear. That is not the way this should be addressed. And when I'm looking at the district from CCSD, clearly it says Tina Dickerson, the payer of the bill, the owner of the property. So that's, I just wanted to address a couple of things with Mr. Schultz on that. And then I have other comments at 3A. I've turned in a slip.
Okay,
thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Dickinson. Okay, the next person, let me reset. The next person that I'd like to call is Mark Ober.
Hello, Mr. My name is Mark Ober. I'm a resident of Cambria, property owner. I thought the presentation was excellent. It's based on numbers, but those numbers take into consideration not a single option. It's to say, what did we spend in the past and what will we spend in the future? They are a subsidiary of Waste Management. Waste Management's profit across the last 6 years is 12%+ per annum, and they're a subsidiary of it. Their stock, as Tina mentioned, is only up about 35% in about 5 months. I would ask our general manager to explain what alternatives we've sought. For example, have we considered less collection? Our green wastes are seldom out in front of properties. I did an audit when 100 homes, less than 30% have their green can out each week. That's a truck, empty. Have we looked at the alternative of other recycling places such as up in San Simeon that do green waste and mulch? Have we done the same thing in taking a look at it, solid waste, not the gray can, shall I say it, where we're recycling cardboard? We have people who make profit off of that currently in our community. Could we use them, subsidize what's going on? I think this is a great group. There are 9 districts that are listening to what they have to say, but I haven't heard one thing that our district has done specifically from CCSD management that says, we looked at this alternative or we looked at this alternative. That's what I think the community would want to see. I'd also like to comment that the employees are really great employees. They're so friendly, the people who collect our trash, and they will help out. But on the other hand, this is corporate America. This is Waste Management. It's not local hokel that we're discussing and what their profit margins. If you don't look at the totality, welcome to oligopoly. And I give the rest of my time to this fine gentleman here.
I'm not sure that that's something we can do. Let me ask
our... I thought you said you could. That's the only reason I said.
No, I didn't say that.
Okay. I thought it was asking.
You could ask his questions.
Okay. Can I ask your question, sir?
And you have...
Make an exception, ma'am.
I can't make an exception.
You have that right as well.
Yeah, you're using his time.
Okay. I'll come back.
Okay, thank you. Okay. So... At this point, I don't have any more slips, so I'm this gentleman has slips. So, since I know your name, Mr. Willems, you may come. Yes, go ahead and come up.
I stole your pen. I'll make sure I give it back. Oh. Okay, I'm not here to discuss rate increases because basically, I totally agree with rate increases. According to CPI, that's great. I'm here to talk about methodology. And what I'm referring to is the last time with the rate change, I got this piece of paper that had all of these percentages of proposed increase. And if you take all of those proposed increases, percentages, 6.48, 6.3. You add the whole thing up, you come up with 62% increase. And that's what they based this on, was 62%. But all of these are part of operating costs. If I took my budget and I said, oh, by the way, my name is Gary Willem, so I don't know if that was put there to begin with.
And you're from Cambria.
And I am from Cambria, a ratepayer. So if I took my way of doing budgets and I listed everything down, my rent went up by 3%, my utilities 2%, my auto insurance went 5%, my gas, et cetera, it come to 20%. I didn't have a 20% increase in my budget. No, that's it. And what they did here is they itemized each one. I'm surprised they didn't put in here that chewing gum went up 5%. And so they were going to add another 5% for chewing gum on there. They came up with, it came to 62%. We paid 62% more. And every one of these things is just a, like the cost of gas or oil. I put that in my budget, but it didn't go for an overall budget. This is the methodology for making these cost analysis are wrong. That simple math, guys, it's just simple math. If I get 10% off on each item I buy, that doesn't mean that I get 10, 20, 30, 40, 50% off. What that means is that my whole budget is 10%. So these ways of figuring are wrong. Even the way that we were talking about it today with these increases, they added up percentages. You add up amounts, not percentages. Next of all, our regular United States cost consumer price index is projected to go up by 2%. They want a maximum of 7. Okay, give me figures that their increase went up. Their total, this is what it costs us to operate, not percentages, amounts. Then you get to the bottom of how much that you did, that you collected and what it was. That's methodology. And that is not the methodology that I hear and I see right now. Our consumer price index is 2.95 last year, and it went up how much percent? I know. There it is. I'm going to put your pen down.
Thank you, Mr. Willems. Okay. So since I don't have any more slips, I would like to invite anyone who is in the room to come up, identify yourself, and let us know that you are from, or you're a Cambria resident, and we'll go from there. This is public comment. That's true. Yes. Well, we are going to present 3A, and when we do that, yeah. Anybody else in the room? Yes. We'll wait for you. Do you need some help?
Hi.
Hello.
I'm Jonathan Bartell, a resident, homeowner. What you've done here today, to quote the great Mel Brooks, is a presentation of genuine frontier gibberish. The bureaucracies presented here was classic and obfuscating, not useful, and you can do better. And I urge you to do better in the future. Your job is between those people and us. You need to interpret for us, not let bureaucrats and those folks manage the discussion. there was a something up there on the screen. I could not personally read it. I don't know if other people could, but I would say that that was not terribly useful. One thing that I want to address is it's been said that protest forms will be tabulated. I'm hoping that letters submitted to the district will also be tabulated. I understood that that was a way to protest the rate increase, and that's the route I took. So I'm hoping that my protest will be included. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in-house that would like to speak?
Madam President?
Yes. Well, hello.
Excuse me. I just wanted to clarify. I've construed this as part of the protest hearing.
Yes. And
that when this ends, the protest hearing ends, that will be the last chance to submit a written protest. And yes. I want to make sure that everyone was aware of that so that now they know when this part of the hearing ends, there's no more ability to protest the rate increase.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone online?
No.
Okay. And no one else in-house. Let me just clarify what is going to happen now. The part of the hearing is a presentation and a introduction of the agenda item by our general manager McElhaney. When that happens, since you did give me a piece of paper and there was some confusion about that, I'm going to allow you to come up and make public comment, but I'm going to have him first present that agenda item.
Madam President, would you like me to address some of the questions before I open the agenda item?
Is that how you would like to do it?
I'll defer to you.
Okay. If that would be helpful, would that be helpful for everyone? Ms. Dickinson, you need to not be speaking out. You need to wait till we recognize you. Thank you. No, I'd like you to present the agenda item, and then I think not only you, but Mr. Schultz and Mr. Claren and you, Mr. McElhaney, will be allowed to answer questions that you have heard so far.
Understood.
Okay. So go ahead and we'll go ahead and present that agenda item. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam President. Agenda item 3A, public hearing pursuant to Proposition 218. Regarding Mission Country Disposal Solid Waste and Recycling Collection and Disposal Service Rate Increase Request and Discussion and Consideration of Adoption of Resolution 06-2025, authorizing the Solid Waste and Recycling Collection and Disposal Service Rate Increase. The fiscal impact, all costs associated with the processing of the Prop 218 increase is to comply with those regulations, and that will be borne by Mission Country Disposal. The solid waste and recycling collection service rate increase is 12.59% for solid waste, recycling, and green waste organics collection services. In addition, commencing each January 1 of 2026, 2027, 2028, and 2029, solid waste rates would be adjusted on the following basis. On the annual charge of the Bureau of Labor Statistics, CPI, for garbage trash collection in the U.S., all city average within 2% adjustment with a maximum of 5% adjustment. There's a calculation of a 10% profit allowance starting in 2026 with an estimate at an additional 0.67 to 0.69% of that adjustment in 2026. Additional of a revenue balancing mechanism in 2027 where actual revenues from solid waste rates over or under projections will carry forward into the previous year as described by Mr. Schultz. Rate adjustments for January 1, 26, 27, 28, and 29 are not expected to exceed 7%. This public hearing is being conducted in accordance with the requirements of Prop 218 in order to protest the proposed increase. Written protests against the proposed increase must be filed with our confidential administrative assistant before the close of the hearing. And it should be noted, for the purposes of determining the protest, state law provides for one written protest per parcel. There are 410 parcels within the CCSD. We have also have the assistance of the City of Atascadero's Deputy City Manager and District Clerk, Mrs. Christensen, and she will be available to assist in the counting of these protests. It is recommended the Board of Directors adopt resolution if not a successful protest, that the Board of Directors adopt a resolution 06-2025 authorizing Mission Country Disposal Solid Waste and Recycling Collection Disposal Service Rate Increase Request.
Thank you, Mr. McElhaney. So since I do have one slip that identifies this agenda item, I'm going to go ahead and let that person make their comment. And then I'm going to have a time when all of the questions that have been asked will be answered. Does that make sense? Okay. Thank you. All right. So Ms. Dickinson, please come up and make your comment.
Tina Dickinson, Camria. There we go. Under California Constitution, Proposition 218, ratepayers have the right to protest fees proposed for water, sewer, and trash. I have never seen, since I've done the first Prop 218 in 2007 and done every single one since then, I have never seen a general manager of this district go beyond what the Prop 218 notice, when it was sent out, the 45-day period that we have the right to protest, making a case for Mission Country, making a case in public, on social media, in my emails, wherever. That is not his job. His job is to be here and read out the item at the hearing. It is not to go to NCAC and promote Mission Country and these rate increases. And so that is something I've never seen before. The franchise fee, there seems to be such confusion among the directors as to where or how or what where the franchise fee is supposed to go, what it's supposed to do. At the last finance committee, not this last one, but December 10th, there was conversation, discussion about the franchise fee. The chair of the finance committee said, well, you know, we may not be able to get this franchise fee much longer. And then the general manager comes in on Zoom and says, well, I think we really need to get that franchise fee for facilities and resources. The vets hall needs a whole lot of work, even millions of dollars, he said. And so where is the understanding about the franchise fee? One director says, oh, the franchise fee is used for the low income to pay that 40%. So what is it about the franchise fee that is not understood by this board or the general manager? Because something is really askew here. Not only that, we know that Zolli versus the City of Oakland, the California Supreme Court ruled on that, made a decision. There are current lawsuits over the franchise fee, one as close as Paso Robles, another one in Redlands, some in LA County. And so something's got to be done. You are not providing a service to the community. Mission Country is providing that service. You sign on the dotted line for the contract. 218 requires a benefit from the service that's provided, that where an increase is involved. You're not providing a service. And so that needs to really be looked at legally. And legal counsel, I hope you've talked to legal counsel before this meeting, because this is not right.
Thank you very much. Yes, thank you, Ms. Dickinson. Okay, so now at this point, let's go ahead. And there have been several questions out there. Shall we start with Mr. Schultz?
Happy to do so, Board President. And I can answer some, but not all of the questions I've heard. Some are best for the General Manager and/or Jeff Claren. Sorry, General Manager Jeff Claren, but also your District General Manager, Matt McElhaney. So taking them in order, an early question was, for future years, will the increases in rates be based on actual change in expenses or CPI? The answer to that question is it will be based on the CPI for garbage and trash, that national index, not actual expenses incurred by Mission Country Disposal. For the key reason is that provides you regulation over how much ratepayers pay to fund the operations. Changes in the company's expenses would not change what folks pay. So if the company spends more, that does not result in a change in what folks pay in those indexed years. The exception to that is when you get to a cost-based rate adjustment year, which can occur no sooner than 5 years in the future, that would then be a reconsideration of projections based on actual expenses. So the short answer is for the next 4 years after this initial increase, it would not be based on actual expenses, just CPI. Next question I heard was with respect to, could there be advantage to the district in considering Chicago grade landfill due to the closer proximity to the district and the difference in rate? And I would defer in part to Jeff Claren with the company on this question. But my understanding of it here is though that is closer to the district, it would add time overall to your route operations because Waste Connections, Corporation Yard, and base of operation are in South County, located near the Cold Canyon landfill. So to go out of the way towards Chicago Crate and then back to South County where the trucks are parked and the drivers report for duty would actually increase overall labor time and driving miles. There were some questions around kind of, figures presented in Waste Connections rate application. I want to assure the district board and the public, we've thoroughly vetted all of the numbers. We know when there's lots of different numbers stated in different ways, it can get a bit confusing. But our job as third party neutral folks working on behalf of the public in this, we do thoroughly vet every one of those figures. And we stand behind the results and our findings. There was a question, could the district's franchise fee be used to offset rate adjustments now or in the future? And the short answer is yes, that is a policy that the district could consider, either by use of those revenues to partially pay for rate adjustments or to change the franchise fee in order to decrease the amount of rate adjustment needed. There's been no direction on that, which is why the rate application as recommended, it continues with the existing practice of the 6% franchise fee on gross revenues. I will defer to your general manager with respect to alternatives or attempts to negotiate an adjustment. My work and my firm's work in this was under existing operating conditions and per the framework of the existing rate adjustment methodology. So there hasn't been direction provided regarding alternatives or adjustments. And I believe your general manager can contemplate what could potentially occur going forward in that respect. There were some questions around kind of Waste Connections overall company financials. We've reviewed in our work, and they are provided in with the rate applications, the company's audited financial statements. And in those financial statements, over the course of the last several years, Mission Country Disposal has either not earned a profit in the service area or has not earned very much of a profit in the service area. Though the comments did state that on a national scale, Waste Connections may be doing very well. The subject of our work was based on their financials here, in the Cambria service area, the area provided, serviced by Mission Country Disposal, and they are not achieving industry standard profit or at times any profit over the recent history in this agreement. There were questions around the Prop 218 envelope and statements. That's not a subject I can speak on. That's not my area of expertise, nor was I involved in that piece of this. With respect to the effective date of rate adjustment back to January 1, the rate application was made as of a January 1 effectiveness date, and other agencies in the county are considering the authorization of the rate adjustment here in middle January with it would be a slight proration on the bills back to January 1. To do it differently would have had a larger overall rate adjustment because this is, you know, for an annual overall fiscal year budget. I think I have, you know, there's one other question, a commenter expressed, you know, kind of, you know, questions around the approach to the methodology and just adding up a percentage. You know, again, here in our role, I've been doing this for 20 years. We do know not to add percentages in the way that we're reflected. This really has been a thorough assessment of, you know, actual financial statements of projections, looking at revenues, addressing it in the same way you as a district would for your enterprise funds or other budgets. This wasn't simply an adding of percentages. It was based on, you know, an assessment of, you know, the reasonable costs of providing these services and the revenues at current rates that are available to fund those services. And that's where the resultant percentage adjustment here in Cambria was the result of. I believe that's all the questions I can answer for you. If there's others of the board, I'm happy to help with those as well. But otherwise, I defer to Matt Meckelhan, Jeff Clarence. Hey,
thank you very much, Mr. Schultz. Would Mr. Clarence, would you like to come up to the podium, please? And please let the people who are in the room know who you are.
Thank you, Board President, members of the board. My name is Jeff Claren. I'm with Missing Country Disposal. And I think Garth did a good job of answering a lot of the questions, but maybe I'll just kind of comment on a few of them. And I'll try going in order. I think there's one in the presentation that Garth actually asked how many container carts that was brought up. And I just want to give a little percentage. About 86% of these Cambria residents have the 32-gallon, 64, the middle-sized can is about 12%. And the larger size can is about 2%. So that was a question in the presentation. On the first commentary, I think Garth did a good job. One of the things I just want to reiterate, we are doing a cost-based year. So the next years are not cost-based year. So if we do spend more, it is on us. So it is not rolled over and is not a CPI on top of a potential of us spending more than we need to. And another thing too, the rate where they're at Chicago Grade Landfill is $62, but if you look at January 1st, the rate there is actually $73 per ton. That got raised in January 1st. And the next comment, I just can't read my writing sometimes. I think we talked about we were talking about negotiations if the CSD did negotiate. And they did. They were using R3, and then there's a lot of negotiation. That's how a lot of the service enhancements came in, where CSD right now does do the low-income program at 40%. What we're doing now is the Mission Country Disposal is going to be covering 20% of that, half of that, and also the clean cart exchange and the one free bulky. So those are all negotiated items within this rate increase. Ms. Dickinson brought up the relationship with R3, Mission Country Disposal, and Waste Connections. Let me just make that clarification. We're Waste Connections, not Waste Management. R3 was hired by the City of San Luis. They're a third party. They only do municipalities. They don't work for private companies like who I work for. And Mission Country Disposal is indeed a subsidiary of Waste Connections, which is a national company. And one of the things that was brought up was financials, P&Ls. Well, we actually are required to do third-party audited financials, which is sent part of your district, and it was actually part of the rate application. So that's all stated in there. And if you look at Garth's first initial report, it does show what our profit loss margins for the last 10 years, and you could see there was clearly negative for quite a while. There was a rate increase in 22 that brought us back, but there was a lot of downsizing that happened, and it brought us back to negative. So well, the good thing about this is when this new rate manual, it's really going to include a rate stability portion. So there is no these fluctuations. It's going to be pretty steady. So it's should bring it back to a little bit stability on side those side of things. I think Mark brought up something about waste management again. I just want to reiterate, we are Waste Connections, not waste management. And I think I answered the other question where Gary brought up was the profit. If you actually look at one of the pages, our financial audits, we were negative for a long time. And now our profit margins are going to start be a little bit stable. And I don't know if Garth quite showed that one, but when you look at it, if you look at the overall percentage on what we spend, we are going to actually make a net profit of 5% on this contract. And that's going to be steady throughout, and we won't be going negative. This is going to be stability throughout the whole time. And I believe those are all kind of the questions that I could answer. And if General Manager McElhaney or Garth want to add anything, feel free to do so.
Thank you very much, Mr. Clarence.
No problem.
Appreciate it. General Manager, I would like to give the board a chance to discuss or ask questions prior to your answering questions. Does that make sense? Okay. So let's go ahead and do that then. Yes.
Okay, so there was comments that we did not try to do anything to assist customers with. I'm sorry. Can you hear me now? Thank you. There were comments that the district, the board did not do anything to attempt to help out the people with these rates. And I just wanted to say that Director Gray and I spent a significant amount of time back and forth with Mr. Clarence of Mission Country Disposal on all the possibilities there could be to reduce the rates, including looking at the 19-gallon cans, not collecting every week, all of those kinds of things. And the only thing we were able to really come up with was that 40% decrease in the rates to those customers who are low income that qualified with CARES. And we spent a significant amount of time working on this and exploring all of the options with Mr. Clarence. So we did make as much effort as we possibly could to help out the community members.
Thank you. Your light is not. Do any of the other board members have statements or answers to any questions? Yes, Director Former.
Thank you, President Scott. Not necessarily answering any questions right now, but perhaps an explanation from either our general manager or legal counsel or both with regard to, since franchise fees were brought up, exactly what they are, how they apply to the district. Thank you.
Mr. McElhaney, how would you like that answered?
Well, part of this, and I can also defer to Mr. Carmel, but as Ms. Dickinson noted, there is a court case that may be setting some precedent on what those franchise fees are for. Typically, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Carmel, those franchise fees are used to, for instance, repair streets and roads that these trucks can do damage to over the years. And those are applied. In our case, we don't manage roads. And so to Mrs. Dickinson's point, when we were talking about the finance committee, what we were going to do with some of our franchise fees, typically those have been used for various different district operations and or put in reserves. So the conversation at the finance committee meeting was the discussion of how can we use some of these funds and put it back into the community, hence some of the vets hall repairs. If we take a look at our floors in the vets hall, they are extremely worn and we are in need of some serious rehab. So while we received those franchise fees, we were discussing how do we inject those back into the community. And the Vets Hall is supposed to be a community center. So that was some of the discussion. Am I missing anything, Mr. Carmel?
Franchise fees, excuse me, I've been ill. Franchise fees are general fund revenues. And they're used at the discretion of the board, like any other general fund. The legislature and statutes don't dictate how they're to be used.
Thank you. I
I do want to touch on one other issue.
Yes, please.
You, there was a comment that the 218 process requires some sort of a indication on the envelope as to the nature of the proceeding. I'm not aware of any such requirement. And I looked at the 218 implementation statute, and it doesn't include anything like that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carmel. Yes, Director Gray.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, President Scott. Yeah, a couple of comments, points that were raised or questions that were asked. several people commenting were talking about the relationship between Mission Country and its parent company, which is, of course, Waste Connections, not Waste Management, as Mr. Claren noted, and that the parent companies are quite profitable. And of course, our analysis of the profit and loss is based very local. It's based on Mission Country's own results. I think that's appropriate, though, no matter, whatever the results of the parent company is, because a company that is a subsidiary still has to be profitable for the parent company to continue to own it. Because if, for instance, Mission Country were not consistently profitable company, if I were management of the parent company, I would say, well, we might as well offload this one because it's not making money for us. It's costing us money. So you have to have profitability at the local level, whatever, even if it's an independent company. So I think that it's a bit of a red herring to talk about whatever the fortunes of the parent company are. And I also was going to ask Mr. Carmel this about, he kind of answered the question. My understanding about the notices that go out, protest notices that go out, is that I'm not sure that's even required under Prop 218. This district in the past, I don't think actually even mailed out protest forms until a few years ago. We did that, I think, the first time. We had some discussion of that when we had the last water rate increases, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know this is before General Manager McElhenney was here, but maybe someone else can answer that question.
Let's not interject.
But I think I think we are actually going a little bit above and beyond the requirement at this point. I might be wrong, but maybe somebody can clarify that for me.
Mr. Carmel, did you want to clarify?
Sure. There's no requirement to include a protest ballot in the envelope. We did do it once, I believe, and it's been debated before, but it's not a legal requirement.
Thank you, Mr. Carmel.
Yeah. In other words, the notice has to go out, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Vice President Thomas, thank you. Thank you, Director Gray.
Yeah, thank you, President Scott. I brought a copy of the notice that was mailed to our house. And right on one side, it is, our names are current resident, and on the other side of the envelope is Mission Country disposal rate adjustment effective. So it's very clear on the exterior of the mailing what this is. One of the things that I'm very interested in is the discussion on alternatives. And this is not a low barrier to entry kind of industry. The capital investment involved in forming a waste disposal company is tremendous. The cost of the trucks, the relationships with the disposal sites, and not all disposal sites are taking new customers. The discussions, there have been discussions about, well, go out to RFP to see who's interested in bidding. There are not that many competitors. We've got Waste Management, and Waste Connections. Perhaps a bit of discussion about that. And also, what would the impact be if we go out to a request for proposal? Would that reset the clock, enabling Mission Country Disposal to start from scratch with a different set of rates that would no longer be constrained by the Proposition 218 process?
Thank you, Vice President Thomas. So we have looked at these things. So as you said, there's not a lot of competitors in this industry. And so we have Mission Country Disposal, Waste Connections, Waste Management, which is out of Templeton. And then there's Paso Robles, who services their own trash. We looked at those other rates between Templeton and Paso Robles. They are a little bit lower, but when you think anecdotally about what it would take for them to come all the way to Cambria, I would imagine that their rates would be just as high as what we're looking at with Mission Country Disposal. We've also entered into these negotiations along with the nine other entities to work on these rates and the other benefits. At our last board meeting, we extended our franchise agreement with Mission Country Disposal 1 year in order to take a look more in depth at the potential for going out to RFP. But to your question, if we went out to RFP, and I confirmed this with Mr. Claren, it theoretically would open it up to discussions about what they would be willing to charge us. Perhaps in this next 1 year, they take a look at their overall profit and it's costing them more to service us. As stated multiple times, they've been in a deficit trying to serve our community. And so that is the genesis of this rate adjustment. If we opened up to RFP and they came in and said, you know what, we're going to look at a totally different rate structure, as would the other entities that would bid on this, we could, in theory, be paying more long range. Additionally, to some of Ms. Dickinson's comments, we put up a page on the website on why we contract with Mission Country Disposal. I, as the general manager, I'm not lobbying for any waste management service other than to give the community the information on why we do what we do. Several public entities contract out services rather than run it in-house. You see that in EMS, where we run private ambulances because it's less expensive than to operate your own ambulance in certain areas. That is the case for us to stand up our own waste management service interiorly. Salaries, administrative overhead, all of those things are incredibly expensive. And it's our belief as staff that this still is the more economic option for us. When I go on NCAC, I answer questions for the public on why we're doing what we're doing. But I'm not going to the public to lobby on this. I'm just trying to present our situation as it stands. And I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, well put. And yeah, I did want to point out from the study that R3 Consulting provided in November for the 8 years ending in from 2018, the 5 years prior to 2018, losses of 19%, 30%, 9%, 19%, 10%, 2023, they just barely broke ground with 2.47%. No business unit is going to be allowed to survive in a corporate environment with these losses. So yes, this resulted in the 2022 rate increase, which was substantial. And here we are again. From everything I can see, there are no significantly better alternatives. I guess the other question that comes up frequently is, what difference would it make, and can we? Because we heard this today and we've heard before, rather than weekly, go to longer time periods. What are the trade-offs there? Because that's a question that has come up.
Thank you, Vice President Thomas. I can defer to Mr. Claren on that. I do believe there's some efficiencies and economies of scale that are there, but I'll defer to Mr. Claren if he wants to talk about why they can't lessen the amount of trips into the district.
Yes, Mr. Claren, thank you for coming up to answer that question.
No problem, Board President. Yeah, we actually talked this with Director Dean and Director Gray. There is an alternative to do the every other week. I think we really looked into that portion, but it's a whole different ballgame because you're going to do, it can be possible. It's just one of those things where this is something that the district wants to do. And we have to really look into it because you'll dedicate all your recycling trucks in 1 week and you'll dedicate your green waste trucks on the other week. But the one thing that we really can't do is on garbage. That has to be weekly service. And I think one of the things that we discussed last time is that in every other week, organics, just because you have food waste in there, you might have an anticipated problems by going every other week with organics because you're waiting there for 2 weeks. And that's and then there's going to be a potential vector. So there was a little bit more issues that came up on every other week, potentially every other week recycling, but green waste and trash was kind of the situation. And if you only do one, recycling just every other week, it doesn't really it doesn't benefit the ratepayer just because you'll still have the same truck. It would be ideal if you could do the green waste 1 week with those same trucks and drivers and do the recycle. But if you're going to have to do off and on, it doesn't quite benefit. There's not quite a huge benefit as what we would think. And I think that's one of the reasons that's why we came back with Director Gray and Director Dean is when we really talked about every other week was it wasn't going to be quite as effective as people think, but we could always relook at it.
Thank you. Yes, Director Dean.
Well, Mr. Clarence is up here.
Yes.
Hey, there has been some controversy over the use of 19-gallon cans and, you know, the possibility of doing that. And some people have said, well, they're saying the trucks can't go up and down the hills, but that was not the issue. I believe the issue was our low-lying power lines and low-lying branches and that they had to be side arm lifts. There were some other things, too, if we can...
This would be if we wanted to use smaller cans.
Yes, if Mr. Clarence can explain what he explained to us.
Sure.
So part of the reasons why, too, is a lot of these other communities that do the 19 gallons, they use the side loader portions, and then that's the one with the automated arm on the side. If you look at a lot of Cambria, there's a lot of places where we do the rear load, where there's people are hanging off the back and pulling on there. And the reason why they use the rear loaders is because it's a little bit lower, and a lot of the trees are a little bit tall, is in the way. Those rear loaders are a lot shorter, and they can actually kind of drive through. When you look at those side loaders, they have a higher top and they're taller, and they have a tendency to hit some of those lower lines in those trees. So that's why Cambria, especially I don't remember that there's a few streets here that actually is really low. What's good about this new rate manual? There is something in the rate manual that talks about new services, and then there's been some things that we've kind of looked into with the 20-gallon services. There's a potential. So I think we can probably table it a little bit later with Director McElhaney and, you know, really talk about that a little bit later. But there is a potential that something could happen on that with our existing smaller trucks.
Thank you, Mr. Clarence.
From.
Yes, Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Scott. Mr. Clarence, thank you for your presentation and answering the questions. So if you could just clarify why it is that the 19-gallon cans can't be rear-loaded.
So last time we made that explanation that the can manufacturer was making it a little too low and it wasn't able to be lifted on the rear loader. It would have to be basically used by employee force, and then we didn't want to make that a habit just because a lot of the other places use the side load, so it's more of an injury risk. We found some new vendors that actually kind of made some taller cans. So that's something of potential that could happen. So now this actually can actually hook up to the rear loader without the use of manual labor doing it. It actually is going to be automated, meaning it's going to be put on a lift and then lifted with a lift instead of using a labor to dump it in there.
Okay.
So perhaps I'm not getting the full picture here. So you're explaining the fact that the rear load will obviously implement the 32-gallon can, but there's no way to also make an arrangement so where the same thing can be done with a 19-gallon can.
What I'm saying is that we really heard you guys last time, so we've been working with the manufacturers and looking at cart containers that there is a possibility now. 3 years ago, there wasn't one possibility. Now that there is some revelations, we've got some garbage trucks that can pick up a little bit smaller can. So this is something where the new rate manual says if it's new services are provided, we can work with the district. to see if that's something that's interested. The new rate manual states how to do that, and we can kind of put something together, a proposal, if that's something that the district would like to pursue. It's not in this application, but it's something else. So like I said, if it's a new service, we could definitely start to pursue something like that.
Yeah, I think part of the reason that folks are concerned about this is that there are so many people in this community that are retired, live alone, that type of thing, and don't necessarily generate that much trash compared to maybe Morro Bay or Cayucos that are more family-oriented. I just want to mention one thing, and I hope this doesn't upset some people, but I think I just want to say this. We don't have anyone complaining about the quality of service that your company provides. And I hope people would take that into consideration, that we're extremely fortunate, considering circumstances, that and somebody coming by and picking up your trash every week and it's dependable in every fashion is something we like shouldn't take for granted. That's what I want to say. Thank you.
Director Farmer, thank you for that. You know, I mean, that's one of the things our folks really pride on is service and customer service, both from the office standpoint and from the field standpoint. So that's great to hear. We'll make sure to pass this off to our next tailgate meeting.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Clarence. Yes, Director Gray.
Yeah. Thank you, President Scott. I have a question actually for Mr. Clarence regarding what some of the alternatives we're talking about right now, for instance, a 19-gallon can and maybe alternate day pick up for recycling, which we have talked about before. In terms of what we're doing today, adopting the new rate schedule, is it true that if we continue our discussion of these alternatives and we come up with one that's cheaper, for instance, a lower rate, a 19-gallon can, that would actually be reflected? Could that be reflected in rates when we agree to that? In other words, we're not locked into rates for 3 years. If we find a way to change the level of service or whatever.
Well, that's the great thing about this new rate manual. Yeah. It allows us to put like a new cost base portion in. And if it's going to include a new scope of service, then it's going to be looked at all over again. And then it would reset basically what you guys, if it's successful today, it would reset what happens today. Yeah. So you could do another one where if that's going to be the case where it's going to be overall benefit, you could probably restart the 5-year clock again.
Right. So basically, what we're talking about today is these rates going forward 5 years are based on current service. And if we change the service level at any given time, this forward rate schedule also might be, depending on what sort of savings there were, that would also be adjusted at the same time.
That is
going
correct.
Forward. Yeah, going yes. forward. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, Director Dean.
Just to be clear what Director Gray is saying, if at some point we find we can do the 19 or 20 gallon can, then that could be adjusted into what we're deciding today when that becomes possible.
That is correct. And this is going to be a little bit of discussion. That's why I said when we can have this a discussion and really see if this is something what the district wants to propose. Because when you look at it as a whole, it's going to cost the garbage company, Mission Country Disposal, to collect Cambria that's with the same trucks and the same people. There's going to be a cost associated with that. And how it's broken down, it's going to be depending on the service sizes. So you're still going to have the same costs. What might happen with a new container, some of those costs might be spread out through all the other services. So you may add 19 gallons, but some of the other ones may go up a little. So that's the part where it's you're still gonna have to, for example, if it's $1 million to collect Cambria and it has a 30, it's not going to change if we add a 19 gallon. It's still going to cost us about $1 million to collect Cambria. Right. So if we're taking a little bit less revenue, it's going to be somehow that 19 gallon, the difference from the 32 and the 19 will be spread out somehow through the new rates. So that's why it's, when we talk about it, we can come back with it and it helps add a 19 gallon in there, but there's going to be some of that cost that might be spread out. It may not be as much since we're going to collect less, but still, there's still going to be some of the portion that's going to be proportioned out to some of the other container sizes.
Okay.
And Director Dean, we're going to be bringing that rate adjustment methodology forward in a future meeting to adopt it formally. And I'll work with Mr. Claren on those options. But I believe, as he's saying, the monies are going to get spread out. So if we have that 20-gallon can, we'll see increases in the other cans to offset it, because either way, like he says, they're coming to the district. But we'll take a look at it and see if there's other options.
I remember we discussed that before. So, okay, one other thing.
Yes.
There is a benefit that we get from Mission Country Disposal that not everybody may be aware of. And that is, if you're a person who changes your own oil in your vehicles, Mission Country Disposal provides the drain pan and a bag for the filter, and will come and pick that up and give you back a clean drain pan and another bag for the filter without any additional charge.
That is part of the bundled service. That is correct.
And I have to say that service is excellent. And if your drain pan disappears for some reason, the gentleman that comes and picks it up will spend as much time as it takes to help you try to find it. And if they can't, they replace it. And I can vouch for that, because someone stole mine when it was full.
We verified it was not one of our employees.
No, I have it with my security camera. I saw the person do it when I looked at the recording later. But thank you. These people are very caring and considerate and go out of their way to help you. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Dean. Yes, Vice President Thomas.
Yeah, thank you, President Scott. And yeah, sort of my last comment on the smaller container. It's pretty easy to think through the mechanics and the overall cost. The same truck has to drive the same streets, and the process of emptying the smaller can is going to be about the same as the larger can. The same number of employees. So. Just occurs to me, it's something we should pursue, but it doesn't sound like a panacea. So worth consideration, but we'll see.
Thank you, Vice President Thomas. Mr. McElhaney, do you have questions that you would like to answer that were posed that have not been answered yet? Thank you, Mr. Claren.
Thank you, Mr. Claren. Thank you, President Scott. Let me go backwards here and take a look at some of the questions. So we talked about investigating alternatives. I think we've covered that pretty well. We talked about the Prop 218 envelope and how that's within specs. We've talked about less collections. We've addressed that. Franchise fees. So the franchise fees currently we use, we have about 153 low-income qualifying residents in Cambria, in which we use those franchise fees to offset their costs of about 40%. What we can do, and it's an option for the board, is now that Mission Country Disposal is going to cover half of that, we could dedicate yet another 20% of our franchise fees that now Mission Country Disposal is covering, so to speak. That is something that we could look at if the board would like, to further lower those low-income residents. So that's something we could definitely take a look at. One more question. I'm sure I addressed all of these. I think we've covered a lot of the questions. Let me look one more time. I think we've covered all of those questions.
I have a question for Mr. Carmel. This is a point of order.
Got it.
Okay. I have someone who came in a little bit later has submitted a comment form, and I'm wondering if it would be allowable to go ahead and allow that person their 3 minutes.
Yes, that's within your discretion.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much, sir. So I'd like to call then Joanne Dean Freemeyer, and please come up to the podium, state your name and where you're from.
Joanne Dean Freemeyer, and address, did you want?
No, just okay. That you live in Cambria.
Anyway, thank you for the opportunity to speak here. Okay, so I've lived in Cambria now for 3+ years. And it's like every year the rate has gone up on the waste disposal. And this is the first community I've ever lived in where you were mandated to take garbage disposal. So it's like a whole new thing to me. And, you know, I'm not happy to see the rates keep going up. So I just wanted to register that. And then I had a suggestion that I don't know if this has come up yet. I'm glad to see you considering the every other week pickup idea. But here's an additional one. And that is, I live by myself. I produce like one wastebasket of garbage per week, okay, which is hardly even worth taking out to the curb, but I do. Plus, you know, maybe one big bag of recycling and a little bit of kitchen garbage. So I know that like weekly pickup is necessary for like the restaurants and such in town because they produce a lot more. But is there any way that you could do tiered service such that those that are producing more pay more and those that are producing less pay less? So that was my suggestion.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay. So at this point, I'm sorry, Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Scott. Nothing to be sorry about that. I'd like Mr. Claren to come up and address one particular item that occasionally crosses my mind. I notice it's a habit of mine to look at people's recycling and trash because I'm just curious what people are throwing away these days. And it's pretty alarming, trust me, the amount as well as what they're doing. And I've often commented to people because they'll put the can out and there's barely anything in it, especially with regard to trash or recycling. And I've commented that I believe that Mission Country Disposal would prefer if you only put your can out once it's like half full, because the more frequently that stops have to take place, more pollution is being generated. It's a time element and that type of thing. So if Mr. Claren could come up and comment on what I just said with regard to what your policy is with regard to how much should be in the container when it's put out at the curb.
That's an interesting question, Director Farmer. It's one of those things. It's, we are there weekly and for every container. And if you don't put your container out, our drivers will pass by it and they won't make that stop. And that could cut down if you keep doing that every week. It will potentially on a next cost base year, it should reflect in a reduced cost on that side of things. And it's in the amount ideal in the container is really the threshold of the resident. You don't really want to do that, especially with trash, just because of vector. It's every 7 days it's got to be picked up weekly. But recycling, it's kind of really up to the resident. The driver will be there. I've never really looked at it to see how much that will save. Just if it's only a few, it may be negligible. But if a lot of people do it, it could make a difference. I've never had that question before, so it's something that we would have to look at. But theoretically, you're right. If they don't put it out, our driver will drive right past it. And again, it's going to be a threshold level on the resident.
Okay, I guess I was as much concerned about if they're not making a stop, and folks might say, Harry, you're getting really picky here. It seems like there's like if the vehicle is stopping and starting, it's a little bit more stress on the vehicle, a little more pollution, so to speak, going up into the environment as well. That would be my take on it.
Yeah, Director Farmer, I have to look into that. I'm going to have to talk to our shop folks and our purchasing folks with the vehicles, because I'm not sure how much that I'm not sure exactly how much the pollution will happen on starts and stops and in the going. I'm not sure if there's studies to see If I'm not intelligent enough to talk about this, so just I have to come back to you on that side of things. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Some people say I'm not either. So thank you so much. All right. Thank you, Mr. Clare.
Thank you. Okay. Vice President Thomas.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, President Scott. And just following up on Director Farmer's comments for years. Oh, I'm sorry.
I actually have one of our, he was a former driver, and he kind of can answer this question. he's our site manager at our site as well.
Okay.
Yep, my name is Nathan Lemieux. I'm the site manager for the hauling company. So for the truck starting and stopping, these trucks are got smart technology on them, so they're regenning. So anytime the trucks are starting, stopped, or in motion, they're regenning, which are cleaning the filter. So it actually makes the air cleaner as they go out. So it burns hotter, regardless if they're stopped or going, they're still clean air as they come out.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay, Vice President Thomas.
Oh, thank you, President Scott. And yeah, that information notwithstanding, yeah, you can imagine my engineering mindset, in basic physics, the energy required to move a vehicle of many tons from a standing stop to whatever speed. More energy will be consumed with every stop, one way or other. So that's why, for years I've been following this practice, and I'm not surprised to hear Director Farmer has, being the environmental conscious person he is. And right, so that's just something I've done for years, and imagine the more of us that do that, the vehicles drive by, it's got to take less time. And eventually there, if the costs come down, it can only benefit us. Again, personal choice.
Thank you, Vice President Thomas. Anything else from the board members? No? From Mr. McElhaney?
Sorry. President Scott.
Anything else?
No, ma'am.
No. Okay. I just have a question for Mr. Carmel. Mr. Carmel, are we ready now to have a motion?
No. Excuse me, Madam President. We're ready to call. We're ready to call a timeout and have the tabulation from the neutral protest officer.
Okay. Thank you very much. So we'll take a break. How long do you think you'll need? Okay. So let's say we'll reconvene at noon. Okay. We'll reconvene at noon. Thank you. Is Mr. Carmel online?
Yes, Madam President.
Okay. Thank you so much. So we are at a point. We have the results of our tallying. Laura, please give us the information that we need.
Thank you, President. A majority protest does not exist. There were 379 valid protests received.
Thank you so much.
There are 4,010 parcels. It required 2,006 protests received to be a majority. Yes, 379 in total.
Thank you. At this point, are we ready for a motion? And I would like to say something prior to the motion. Because we had a statement earlier about depending on how we voted, let me tell you that our decisions are made based on what we believe is the best for the community, not based on who's going to vote for us. So just to let you know, that's what's important to this board, not whether or not you vote for us. So thank you. Do I have a motion?
Yep. I'd like to move that this board adopt Resolution 06-2025, authorizing the solid waste and recycling collection and disposal service rate increase.
Do I have a second?
I'll go ahead and second that.
Director Gray?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Dean?
Aye.
Vice President Thomas?
Aye.
President Scott?
Aye. Thank you so much for joining us. You can stay for another two agenda items, but we're going to go ahead with the rest of the agenda items that we have on our agenda today. So our first agenda item is 4A, and I would like our general manager to present this agenda item, please.
Thank you, President Scott. Agenda item 4A, discussion and consideration of voting for a special district representative for the San Luis Obispo Local Agency Formation Commission, LAFCO. There's no fiscal impact associated with this. This nomination is for two regular special district seats on the LAFCO Commission. One seat is for a two-year term set to expire in December of 26, and the other would serve through 2028. Each special district may nominate one candidate for each seat. President Scott was with me at one of our CSDA chapter meetings, and they spoke about these two seats being open. And I communicated with the board last meeting, and President Scott was interested in serving on the commission. So we have prepared the staff report and will submit this to LAFCO. And I believe the deadline is February 7th. And I'll turn over to the board for discussion.
Thank you. Any discussion?
I think it's wonderful that you are applying for this.
Thank you.
And it's been years since we've had somebody from the CCSD representing us at LAFCO. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and I'd like to add, without being recognized, that LAFCO will be well received, well served by having you involved. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just second all those comments because I think it's good. You know, President Scott is eminently qualified for this. It's good. And we'll see what happens because I guess it's competitive, but it's great for us to have a voice on that commission because it is it's a significant say in how we serve kind of our surroundings, how we define our role, how we're recognized in terms of our response, you know, of our powers and extent of our powers. So it's a good commission to be on. So Godspeed.
Thank you, Vice President Thomas.
Thank you, President Scott. And talk about a win-win. This is a real win for LAFCO. If you're selected, they hope you are, and it's a win for us. Just one question. So it's a lot of work. Why?
Because it's important that we're there. Okay. Yes, it's important that we're there. Do we have any public comment on this agenda item? Oh, please come in. Oh, I didn't see that. I'm so sorry.
On this item, I am a little bit curious because there has been discussion for quite a while about incorporation. And I'm wondering if there are any thoughts regarding incorporation as you, President Scott, enter and apply for this position. Has the board or members, I know it's been brought up. I've been hearing it in some meetings. And so I wondered if that was a part of why you may be wanting to apply for LAFCO. I do know this, that I watch LAFCO sends me their agendas every month, and I've not seen anything yet on the dissolution of San Simeon in their agendas. But my understanding is that that is going ahead right now. The process is going ahead through the county. But I've also been told that certain people in the county are saying to CCSD, well, you know, maybe you should look at this and maybe think about San Simeon. I don't think the CCSD is prepared to do any such thing with all the issues that we have surrounding us. Thank you.
Thank you. I can let you know just personally that I have no agenda going into this. I just want to make sure that Cambria is served the best possible way. Yes, Mr. Dudzik, would you like to come up and make a comment?
Very much, Madam President. I very much agree with what you said earlier. CCSD needs to be represented. This community needs to be represented at LAFCO, and having you there would be tremendous. I hope all the best for you.
Thank you.
Please ask David to call the FPPC guy back, please. Period.
Mr. Carmel, I think you're on speaker. Sorry.
Okay. All right. So any other public comment? Anything online?
No.
Okay, thank you. Do I have a motion?
Okay. Yeah, I move that the wording right here that to vote for President Deborah Scott, this board, to be special district representative for the San Luis Obispo Local Agency Formation Commission. I guess it's not nominate, but vote for.
Do I have a second?
Is that correct?
Oh, second.
Yeah. That's correct.
Director Gray?
Aye.
Director Dean?
Aye.
Director Palmer?
Two ayes.
Vice President Thomas?
Aye.
President Scott?
Aye. Thank you for that vote of confidence. Thank you. Okay, so let's go then to agenda item 4B. And I think Mr. Green is here, or Mr. McElhaney, will you go ahead and present this agenda item?
Absolutely, President Scott. Agenda item 4B, discussion and consideration of adoption of resolution 07-2025, amending the fiscal year 24-25 final budget. Currently, as we know, we're working through our coastal development permit with the County of San Luis Obispo. This process obviously has been a popular or unpopular topic for our district for quite a while. This application goes back a better part of a decade. A decade ago, we put money towards the permitting process. And over the last decade, we have used all of those monies. And now with the change in the project description, some of the information hold items that we are addressing with SWCA, that those monies have run out, which means we need to now compensate the county for reviewing these documentations. Even our site visit with the Coastal Commission and the county on February 10th is billed to us as a part of this permitting process. Additionally, as part of the mitigation for the water reclamation facility, the sound enclosures that are no longer needed from the blowers and the brine pond are being decommissioned and taken down as a part of those mitigation efforts towards the coastal development permit. And those are costing a decent amount to remove as well. We're looking at some additional contingency money because whether we like it or not, this permitting process is going to go on for a little bit, and it's going to cost the district, and we are out of budget monies for that. And so what we look to do is get a budget adjustment to move this process forward. There are a couple options. We spoke with county officials as far as the permitting monies go. We've talked to the county about applying for a waiver. Our belief, speaking with county staff and the current state of the county in terms of their deficit, and considering how long the district has taken to move this project forward, we think it probably unlikely that they're going to waive the fees again. They could give us a partial waiver. However, it'll take a couple months, if not 3 months, to get that on the Board of Supervisors for approval. And we would like to not stall this project out and keep moving forward. And so despite the increase in costs from the county level that, as of now, they haven't given us a full number yet, but anywhere between $15,000 and $25,000 more in permitting and review is ahead of us. And so we would prefer to keep moving forward on this. We do have healthy WRF reserves in combination with our water reserves in excess of $6 million. $100,000 is not a little amount of money. We understand that. But we want to move this permitting process forward, and we'd like to not stall out. So our recommendation is for the budget adjustment, and I'll turn it over to the board for further discussion.
Thank you very much.
Yes, actually.
Okay.
President Scott, can I interject here for a little bit?
Absolutely.
So that budgetary amount of $13,293 that we're running out of and need to reciprocate and pull that bucket back up, that was a fee waiver that we applied for back in 2013. So we're already operating off a fee waiver from the county. And again, I agree with General Manager McElhenney that a 90-day timeline is minimum with something like that. And I don't think attaching a longer timeline to this project is beneficial for us at all. And also that they've already kind of extended their gratitude and equity towards us on this project. So that's all I just wanted to chime in. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Yes, Director Gray.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, President Scott. Mr. Green just answered. I think I was unclear about the waiver that was referred to in the discussion. That was, as I assume, was in 2014. That was the standard fee for a conditional use permit or coastal development permit application, and they did waive it. So we have not paid them anything up to this point, right?
That is correct.
That's good to know. Yes. That's a question. I don't know if we want to have a discussion. I had some points I wanted to raise in just discussion, but that was my question.
I don't see any other lights on.
Okay.
So you can go ahead and.
Okay. Well, I see that the situation we're in is not really in a strong position here to make demands of the county because they kind of hold the fate of this, you know, this proposal, this permit application in their hands. But I am a little concerned about setting up a payment system that kind of does not, or actually disincentivizes speedy action on their part. In other words, if we have a system where we'll just keep paying them as long as it takes to get us the permit, I don't think it encourages them to get it done quickly. And I don't want to say anything really negative about the county at this point, but the delays in this project have not been all on our side. We actually kind of give the county what it asks for in the way of, you know, on information holds, and we've done a lot for, you know, several years now. And the county has not been moving forward on this, you know, as fast as they might have in other cases. Who knows why? And I do think we have to be careful not to encourage delays or to reward delays. So if we have an agreement, and I think that option number two is probably the one that makes the most sense of the three options, we have to have something from the county in that, which has some progress points that have to be met at certain times, or deadlines, or what do you want to call them. After we have done all we do, all they've asked us to do, turn in all the information hold material, when are they going to be come back with a permit, essentially, and not just more requests for information, which has kind of been the pattern, I think, over the last few years. So that's my one concern about that. I can see having to, you know, we have this, I think this is kind of a question to Mr. Green or Mr. McElhenney. Our next meeting with them, or your next meeting with them, is going to be quite early, soon, like early February.
Yes.
So we don't want to disrupt that, right? We don't want to disrupt that. But I think in a lot, you know, maybe, you know, a small payment to cover what's going on now, but some kind of agreement with them that there's a, on both sides, there's a sort of a, an incentive to get it done and the payment based on that. So that's my thought on how we structure this.
I can answer some of that, sure. Director Gray, and Mr. Green can back me up because he was here quite a bit earlier than I was in this CDP process. From my understanding, while we did answer some of the information hold when Mr. Green and I started really digging into this project and really starting to move it forward, hence the recommendation to move forward with SWCA and have them assist us with some of those information hold items, I believe a lot of those information hold items were still unanswered. Policy consistency analysis, some of the EIR questions, environmental reviews. And so we just started moving those things forward. We're kind of the bad actors, and I mean that not literally, but we're waiting for some of the items from SWCA and they're behind. We just received some of the information in terms of the EIR addendum that the ad hoc just recently met on. I'm waiting for an updated timeline on the rest of those items that we'll submit to the county. I get the feeling they've transferred it from Jeremy Freund over to Cindy Chambers, who's an environmental specialist within the permitting. And we've already had a meeting with them, and I get the feeling they're ready to move on this project. However, we need to start with our contractor, start submitting this information hold items. I think the option two would work. We do need to front load them a little bit because they are operating in a bit of a deficit based on an upcoming meeting on the 10th, which will cost staff time. Once we submit the information hold items, that will be staff time to review. And so we should get an updated timeline on that. But they've been pretty responsive at the same time, still waiting for our response in terms of the information hold, which at the moment we're kind of beholden to SWCA to do that. But I get the feeling that they're ready to move forward on this project. And I'll let Mr. Green back me up on that or not.
No, you said it perfectly. Yes. Additionally, we dropped the initial CDP from SWCA, and then so they've also had that review time logged as well. So yeah, so we will need to front load this a little bit due to the meetings and the review that's already been performed.
One more question?
Yes.
So can you give me a sense of what that front loaded amount would be? Because this total of 45,000 sounds like, no, I'm sorry, 40,000 sounds like it's for, which expected for all the review going forward. If you just talk about the stuff that we do have to do kind of now, the front loaded amount, what would that be pretty much?
So first she asked about the amount. Yeah, but I think we're looking at about $1,300 or $1,400 that exist currently.
For the 10th meeting?
For the 10th meeting and the pre-review of the CDP that we submitted. Yeah.
So, and I would anticipate, again, it's hard to give those numbers because they're still kind of crunching the numbers on their end in terms of the staff time that they're a little bit in the hole on what the staff time would be for the 10th. How many staff members will be there? And then, as Mr. Green stated, some of the review of these information hold items. I mean, I could ballpark it and say maybe about $6,000 to $7,000 is what they'll need to move forward with the information hold. And then there will be subsequent information hold on the items that we send on this one. So once we submit that documentation, it'll be reviewed again, and they can come back at us again with more information requests. It is it's a difficult process, and this is a complex process. And now we have an environmental specialist that's working on this. So I anticipate more responses, more review, and to Director Gray's point, you know, it will take some time and there will be some delays. But I don't get the sense that they're dragging their heels on this, if that makes sense.
You know, additionally, I would advocate for that second item as well, that real-time billing. We can see, you know, monthly or when they invoice us, what those hours currently are being related to, mm-hmm. and, you know, what metrics those are under. So it's a lot easier for us to kind of track. And I do believe that does take some of the delay out in the process. If you're invoicing at the end of the month for what you've accomplished in that month, I think that timeline will be abbreviated with that sort of billing timeline. And we're not just continually, you know, signing off on permitting fees for this in perpetuity.
Okay. And that'll help us with some reporting too, with utilities reports to update you, Director Gray, and the board on where they are in terms of taking action on some of these items.
Yes, Director Dean.
Just to get my head around these numbers. Okay, so we're kind of behind in paying them for the work that they've already done. And so we need to catch up on that. And we need to anticipate this meeting on the 10th, what that's going to cost us. Do you have a rough idea of the total of those two things?
I'm going to ballpark it around 5,000 for those two things.
Okay, so what you're asking us for, okay, so we're talking about $40,000. Are we to authorize $40,000 if we're doing a real-time billing agreement?
What staff is asking for is that $40,000 plus the other monies
to be in the account. Okay.
And in our budget to move this project forward without continually have to come to the board. with the understanding through the strategic plan that the goal was to get this permitted. And so we're anticipating more costs. I just don't have those at the moment, and we're out of budget.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we need to do this. We've sunk so much into this project already, and it looks like we're really making progress on getting the CDP. So, okay.
And I think the sound enclosure mitigation removal is a very key element to this, for Coastal, but for us and for the community as well. That view shed is, I mean, that does interrupt that view shed. So that's kind of near and dear to my heart as well, in the removal of those.
Oh, I totally agree with that one. I know that we need to do that for the view shed mitigation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. Vice President Thomas.
Thank you, President Scott. Yeah, my only comment is that this has been a key aspect of our strategic plan for some time. And we have made it very clear in the general manager's performance expectations to get this permit. And so we need to put our money where our mouth is. So pulling public comment, I'm ready to make a motion.
Okay. I just would like to make one statement first, more of a request. So I guess it would be in a utilities report. If we could have a table that says, this is the information hold. This is what we've met. This is what another information hold piece is, and that we've met this. And then just real simple, primitive, this is the information hold, and what does, so that we can then show, and as a board know, how much is done with the information hold that we need to hand in.
We definitely can work on that, President Scott, and I'll let Mr. Green jump in. The information hold is really complicated. It is very long.
Well, that's why I'm telling you to do it very primitively.
Okay. We'll do our best. I can do primitive.
Yeah, because I reviewed it before, and it was like, what? What? Yeah, just get very simple so that we know what we've done and what we've met and then where we have to go still.
Very good. So my understanding, President Scott, is we'll have an objective, like a timeline, and whether we've completed it or not, and then in layman's terms, what that scope or objective was.
That'd be great. Thank you. I know it's more work, but so.
Sorry, just a suggestion maybe before we go to discussion and a motion. I don't think it's that the fee waiver application is really mutually exclusive with one of these other plans, because one possibility, which I'll throw out there, is that we go ahead with the real-time billing agreement proposal, and we will billed for pretty upfront for some, for some of the stuff we have to do now, but simultaneously pursue the fee waiver for future billings with the county, because they tend to do that for nonprofits, typically, and of course, other governmental agencies under their purview, such as us. We had a case for it back then, and we probably have a case for it now. And the waiver could be basically up to a certain dollar amount, perhaps, or something like that. It's a judgment of staff. But to pursue that process at the same time as we create the billing agreement.
So currently, with our lift station B4 that we're entering into early engineering on and pre-application meeting with the county, we'll have 4 coastal development permits. Oof. 3 of those we've asked and received waivers for.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So if we included the CDP, but it's earlier amalgamation of it, that's 4 out of 4 projects that we've asked and received fee waivers for. So I want to be equitable for the county too, but I want to make them accountable as well, but I want to make this equitable for us, in future dealings as well.
Yeah. So I think we need to take public comment. Do we have anything in-house? Anyone who would like to comment on this agenda item? Anyone online?
No.
Okay. Do I have a motion? Okay, Vice President Thomas.
I approve that we adopt Resolution 07-2025, amending the fiscal year 24-25 final budget, as indicated in the Exhibit A, in the amount of $100,000, and encourage staff to pursue the alternative two outlined in the staff report.
I'll second the motion.
Okay.
I'd offer a friendly amendment.
Sure.
Encourage staff to pursue alternative two and one simultaneously.
Okay?
Will the maker of the motion?
Absolutely.
Great.
President Scott?
Yes, I am so sorry.
I'm sorry about once again, and I should have made this comment earlier, and I'm reluctantly going to vote in favor of this motion, in favor of this item, but it just becomes more discouraging with each passing day, week, month, year that we continue to spend more money on this particular facility. And that's all I have to say.
I'll say amen. Okay.
Vice President, or let's see. I'm sorry. Vice President Thomas.
Aye.
Director Gray.
Aye.
Director Dean.
Aye.
Director Farmer.
Aye.
President Scott.
Aye. Hey. So we have only one more agenda item on this agenda, and that is adjourned. Thank you so much for all of you, your attendance. We really appreciate it.